You will no longer stand between me and my destiny.
But I will.
And the masters of the universe. I am Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword and said,
by the power of Grayskull!
Became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together, we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
Welcome to another episode of I Have the Power, a He-Man podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me is my co-host, Steven. Steven, how's it going?
Very well, thank you.
Awesome. We have a special guest today, Steven. Last week, we discussed a particular film, Steven. So tell our listeners what that film was as a reminder, and then introduce them to our special guest.
Yeah, the film we reviewed was The Fall of Grayskull.
Yes,
which was a fan film Kickstarter. It was Kickstarter, I believe, wasn't it? I hope I got that wrong.
We'll confirm with our guest in a second.
Yeah.
He would know. We have the director of the film, Daniel Benedict. Daniel, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
And we're fantastic on our end.
Good.
Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I've been dying to talk to other humans during this pandemic. So it's nice to know I'm not the only one left in the world. So hey.
Yeah. It's nice to know we're not part of the I Am Legend film franchise by ourselves. But we love the film, and by the time this episode is posted, our listeners and we'll be able to hear our thoughts on the film. We thought it was fantastic.
Thank you.
So it's definitely an honor and a pleasure to be speaking to you about it. Before we get into some of the specifics of the film, can you tell us a little bit about your background and also what got you into He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
Man, how much time do we have? I guess my background as it relates to the topic would be as my job is filmmaking, videos, commercials, stuff like that. So I do a lot of film work. And I've been doing that sort of thing. I've been making my own terrible home video movies since, you know, for 25 years or something. I've always had my hand in videos and music and art and all types of as many creative things that I possibly could do. And what was the other question?
How did you get involved with or
He-Man,
how did you get into He-Man and the Masters of the Universe?
I was watching Scooby-Doo as a kid. I guess I was three, and it was in the afternoon, and it was in the episode where the Harlem Globetrotters were the special guests on Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
I think it might have even been a two-parter. I don't remember if it was part one or part two, but after that went off, all of a sudden this new cartoon came on, and it was He-Man, and I was just mesmerized, you know, sitting 1 foot away from the television screen, just, you know, mesmerized by this. And then sometime later, shortly after that, my mother and I were at a store. I don't remember what store it was, but a department store. And there was an end cap on one of the aisles that were filled with Masters of the Universe figures. And I was like, oh, you know, I can't. It's this show that I love now. There's toys of these things, so I begged my mom for He-Man and Skeletor. She only let me pick one, so I picked He-Man. Got Skeletor, you know, just a little bit later for my birthday. She probably bought them both at the same time and just, you know, secretly hid
the Skeletor. Yeah, that's my bet. Yeah.
And ever since, you know, that was my number one thing as a kid, my number one cartoon and toy. I had, you hear people say all the time, like, I had all those, I had all the figures, I had all the, well, you, chances are you didn't, but.
No. it was that many.
I'm like, you liar. But anyway, but I did have quite a bit. I think I had every action figure minus three as a kid. And I've since, you know, as an adult, you know, bought those extra three.
Yeah, of course.
But I collected the toys. When I became a teenager and needed to sell all my childhood stuff, that's the one thing that I kept were my Masters of the Universe toys. And so throughout the years, I've stuck with it a little bit. You know, in high school and the teen years, you know, you kind of get away from it a little bit. But I still used, you know, for class projects, I would sometimes make like little funny videos using my action figures and stuff. And then, you know, later on, my 20s, the 2000X series came out and the commemorative figures and blah, 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 blah. So, I mean, I've always, you know, I've always stuck with it since I was three. So here we are. And now now I'm talking to guys across the world about it. So it's awesome.
I'm envious that you got to make the choice of keeping your collection. I didn't get that
luxury. Say mine again.
Mine were given away. Granted, they went to a good cause. They went to, you know, less fortunate children. But as a kid, and this happened later as I was a kid and I wasn't told that they were going. So one day I just came home and the toys were gone.
Like, oh, no.
Where did they go? And then I got the explanation. I'm like, I get it. I understand. It's cool, but it's kind of a bummer at the same time. So, yeah. And now I'm like, I should get those back. And then I look at the prices on eBay and I'm like, I don't think I can.
Yeah.
I don't think I can do all of them. But
oh,
yeah.
No.
I think if you had the benefit of hindsight, you'd probably never have opened them, would you?
you could have... Yeah, but that would have been no fun. Let's be honest.
No. Maybe you might be rich now. So.
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Speaking of eBay prices, in my early 20s, you know, I got on eBay and I started buying like the figures and the packaging, and I had about 10. And they weren't that expensive. I remember buying like the original like 8-back Man-at-Arms, like pristine, like fresh from the case condition, clear bubble for like $100. And I was like, this is awesome. And so I had 10 really good figures. I had He-Man and like the 8-back Skeletor and not as in good condition. But anyway, there was a time in my 20s, mid-20s, I was like, okay, like I'm like broke. I need money. So like I sold them all for like, I think $250. It was ridiculous. And now like you can't even buy like an original like He-Man in the package for like less than $1,000. It's crazy.
Wowza.
That's why I'm excited for the new stuff that's coming, because I'm like, I can sort of get my old stuff, but even though it's new, be like, it's the best. Yes. It's the next best thing. So I'm eagerly waiting at 36, going on 37. I'm like, all right, when are these shows coming? Because I need those toys. So yeah, it's pretty funny.
I've been doing the wrestler ones, like a Sarah Hulk Hogan one the other day, which I don't know if it was custom or if it was an actual one, but it was Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin as in that the He-Man style.
Oh yeah,
that was quite cool. Yeah.
Yeah, I have been buying those from Walmart. For the first two waves I have, and then I saw the picture of what you're talking about with the Hulk Hogan and Steve Austin with the Snake Mountain ring.
Yeah, that was it. Snake Mountain ring. Yeah, that was quite cool. I was like, I wonder if I can convince my wife if you'll let me buy this. I could say it's for kids.
Pretend it's for your son. Yeah,
they won't be able to touch it. So. Obviously, you're a huge He-Man fan, which otherwise, why would you be on here? But you ended up making like this brilliant like film. So, how did you come up with the concept for Fall of Grayskull, and how did it all come about?
I guess I was at PowerCon. Are you guys familiar with PowerCon?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Have you ever been?
Never had the chance to go on, obviously.
No, not me. Soon,
hopefully next year. Day.
Yeah, hopefully.
Next year.
Let's hope.
So I was at PowerCon, I think it was around 2013, and I just finished up, or was finishing up like a horror movie, and I was thinking about, you know, what my next project would be, and I met a lot of people there, a lot of artists and talented people and cosplayers, and some of the costumes were like amazing, and I was like, man, that's kind of like that one over that Triclops over there, like that could be in a movie. And also I met a guy named John Carroll who had made some He-Man fan films, and he was screening one of those there, and I was like, that looks like so much fun. I'm gonna ask several of these like cosplayers here if they would be interested in you know, helping me do some type of a film. And at first it was just going to be like a trailer. Like I just wanted to make like a kind of like a fake He-Man movie trailer.
Yeah.
But the more I thought about it, I was like, man, it's going to be really expensive just to do a trailer. And I don't think I'm going to be able to raise money. I don't have the money on my own, and I don't think I could raise money just to make a trailer. So I was like, I thought to myself, you know, let's make this kind of like a short film. And so I, over the course of, I guess, a year, I was kind of thinking about it and talking with people about it and getting their ideas and thoughts. And my wife, who I'm married to now, we started dating in 2014, and I think maybe the first couple of weeks we were together, I was like, hey, what do you think about helping me make this movie and you know, do a Kickstarter for it? She's like, oh, that sounds great. And she thought I meant like over the course of like the year. And I was like, okay, well, let's go out today and film the video. And like, so I was ready to go like right then. So we were full speed ahead, nonstop after that. And yeah, and it was very it was a fun process, but I won't get into that because that may be more of your further questions.
Yeah, some of the questions. But yeah, just a quick follow up. Did you when you said you met her and then you asked her to make this movie? Had you told her it was He-Man, or did you like, oh, here it is? And by the way, I'm a huge He-Man fan. Did she know that going in?
I think she knew. When we had known each other in high school, but we, you know, our lives, you know, we, you know, went our separate ways and or whatever, you know, yeah, growing up. But when we reconnected, we had some mutual friends that, you know, knew me and then knew, you know, my obsession over, you know, nostalgia and toys and right, cartoons, et cetera. So when she was talking to them, they were kind of like, now listen, when you go over to his house, don't be freaked out because blah, blah, blah.
He's got toys.
Yeah. And it wasn't the case. They kind of exaggerated. So I think that kind of helped when she did go there and like, oh, by the way, you know, here's this, I'm kind of into this stuff. She, you know, she thought it was really cool. And she's been the most supportive.
Awesome.
Person ever. Like I couldn't ask for a better partner in life, and she had a lot of really cool stuff growing up as well, and she enjoyed toys and She-Ra and Barbie and Strawberry Shortcake stuff growing up. So, you know, we have our moments where we kind of nerd out together a little bit.
That's awesome. That's great.
Yeah.
So back to the film. What was it like having the original Skeletor, Alan Oppenheimer, as your narrator, and how did you get him involved in the process?
Oh man, that's the coolest part of all, having him involved. I going to PowerCon constantly, helping, you know, kind of being on the staff, doing the audio video stuff for Val. I've gotten to meet, you know, tons of people in the community, tons of fans, and I mentioned earlier, you know, cosplayers, artists, you know, professionals, and also all the voice actors. I got to meet when I first met Alan Oppenheimer. I was doing like video like recaps and documentaries for PowerCon for their YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to, like, you know, pull him away from his table and take him out, you know, away from the convention, you know, outside, and like interview him and talk to him. And like, when I first heard him speak, it was the most surreal thing ever, because he, like, when he talks just like Man at Arms. Like, that's his voice.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, this is surreal. Like, is, you know, is this real life? And he was so kind and so sweet and like, so down to earth, and we, you know, kind of became, you know, friends, you know, as much as a you know, celebrity and a fan could, you know, be friends at a convention. Sure. You know, that meeting probably stands out in my head as like one of like the top moments of my life. You know, of course, you know, regular things like, you know, family and marriage and childbirth and stuff, are, you know, the most paramount, but like, the cool, you know, nerdy stuff, like, this was awesome. So, we kind of kept in contact kind of a little bit, and I can't remember, I don't remember when the idea, who had the idea, if it was my wife or me, or I don't remember when the idea popped into my head, but I was like, we should ask Alan to do a voiceover, and he did. Like, he was totally like, oh yeah, that sounds cool. And I was prepared to, like, you know, fly out to his place or record it myself. But he still does a lot of stuff. So I'm assuming he has, you know, a little studio at home or whatever. So he just like emailed me one day. He's like, here you go. Cause I had sent him the script, and he's like, oh, it's great. And then he sent me these, like, several takes, and I'm like, this is amazing. Like, you know, is this real life? And, and so I think that added some legitimacy to the movie. I mean, in the end, the movie is just a fan film, and you know, with all of its you know, restrictions and flaws and everything. But it was still fun, and the fact that the movie starts off with his voice, like,
yeah,
you know, it maybe should have ended with his voice. That way, like, it didn't start the best, and then it was all downhill from there. Maybe
No. Don't just tell yourself short.
Yeah,
it
was, yeah. It's
well done.
I think it sets the tone for the film. Yeah. It sets the tone for the film, and then you go into the story. I really liked it. Yeah. It's funny because fan films are kind of like a big thing. I don't know if I saw you were a Friday the 13th fan. Have you seen Never Hike Alone?
Which one is it?
It's called Never Hike Alone. That Womp Stomp film's made it. It's a Friday the 13th fan film.
Oh, I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
I would watch it. It's fantastic. But I feel like fans are kind of doing better than Hollywood these days. In some respects, like, there's a lot more. It feels like you can be a bit more creative, doesn't it? Like, there's no studio interference and all that. Whereas when they're doing like a big budget film, they seem to be kind of, it's got to be this, it's got to be that. You see a lot of interference and stuff, don't you?
You can imagine Daniel getting a note. Why does He-Man need the sword?
Yeah. It's too violent. Something like that. But the story, I love the story you came up with, like with the whole like the Fall of Grayskull thing. And I liked the Castle Grayskull man. I thought that was really cool. And I was watching a video earlier, actually, and you created that as a toy first, did you? And then, that's just awesome, isn't it? How did you come up with Castle Grayskull man then?
Oh, so I think it was the end of 2011, maybe. A Mattie Collector was having a contest for a new create a character contest, like they did back in the 80s when the Photog was the winner. A kid had sent in a submission back then, and the toy never got made. It was supposed to have been made, but they never got made. So when Classics was coming out, Mattel decided to do like a short little mini line of six figures, and the first one would be Photog, and several others created by people at Mattel, the Four Horsemen, DC, etc. So, and then there was, you know, the last figure in the line was going to be a new contest winner. So I don't know why I decided to send in entries, because, like, you know, I'm always like negative and like nothing ever good's gonna happen. This will never be anything. But I was like, it'll be fun. You know, I was really into classics, and I was enjoying the toys. I was like, I'll create some characters and send it in and see what happens. I had literally no hope or chance or even thought that anything would ever come of it. But anyway, I sent in 5 designs, and Castle Grayskull Man was, in my opinion, like one of the weaker ones that I sent in at that time. I was just sitting at my desk. I was editing something on my desk, and I had the vintage Castle Grayskull playset like off to the side of my desk. And I was I looked over at it, and I was, you know, thinking about creating another design. And I was like, what if, like, you know, this has a face on it. What if, like, there was a person with, like, this playset as, like, a head? Like, what if that was, like, you know? And so I drew it up. The original picture, he had more, like, kind of like a white stringy hair. Like, I could see him with, like, cobwebs on him. I thought he was going to be more of, like, a rock zombie kind of, you know, kind of person. And as far as, like, why the color turned out so dark green instead of like the lighter green, which is what the castle was because the Scareglow figure had come out, and he had that little the key inside the little the gray skull, you know what I'm talking about, the little the accessory, and that was painted a really dark green. So I was like, if they're painting this a dark green, I'm going to assume that later on, if they do a castle, they're going to make it a darker green. So I'll make this guy darker green to match that. But then, that didn't happen. But so anyway, yeah. So that, and then whenever I logged into He-Man.org one morning around San Diego Comic-Con 2012, they had leaked the winner and posted the picture. And I saw that. And like for a few seconds, like it didn't even register, and then I was reading it, and it said my name, and I was like, what is this? And like, I was still, it took me, you know, several moments to like even realize what I was even reading. And then I was like, really, like, is this real? Again, it was one of those moments, like, is this real life? And
it's like, am I still sleeping?
that definitely is one of the coolest things that's happened to me. Like if ever I get down or discouraged, depressed or whatever, like I can always like go grab like one of those figures and like look at the packaging, and I'm like, you know, it says my name on it. I'm like, you know, like, man, like I helped make this like part of like the real Masters universe. So like
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was a very cool thing.
That's pretty cool. That's
great. And so go ahead.
It's a really cool looking, like I said, character.
It's very cool, yeah. And it kind of ties into what they do back in the day where they did, because a lot of the figures look like He-Man, didn't they? But they're just like repurposing. It almost feels like that kind of style in a sense. Like it's almost like a repurposed He-Man, isn't it? As a like a different character the way it is. So it was really cool.
Yeah, thanks. And as far as, and you mentioned it being in Fall of Grayskull,
of course
I had to put it in there. Like I had to do something with it. Nobody else is, you know, like, I always, every video that I've shot since and every like movie that I've made, like in some way, Castle Grayskull is in there somewhere. Like, you know, there's like a figure laying in the background or like, you know, so just as for fun.
That's awesome. One of the questions I have, and I know we kind of jumped right to this question, but I kind of have to. So in a lot of superhero movies now, you know, they come with the end credit tag, and your movie obviously has an end credit scene that sort of, spoilers, it hints and teases, you know, She-Ra and Hordak and all that stuff. So would you ever have plans to ever do a follow-up?
I've thought about it over the years we had a panel, a movie panel at PowerCon several years ago, and I touched on this topic. You know, I have like a story, like a rough story outlined for it, but like what's keeping me from it you know, besides just normal everyday life.
Sure.
And the fact that I've been working on another movie for like the last 4 years, so that's taken up all my time. But of course, right now we're waiting for the actual legit Hollywood film. And of course, we've been waiting since like what, 2001? Like every year, like there's a new script, a new director. But it seemed like it was really gonna happen, like really, really gonna happen this time.
Yeah.
But it might be shelved again. I don't know. But I didn't want to, like, if there was gonna be like an official, real, you know, movie coming out, I didn't want to like, butt up against that. And so I kind of like put that on hold, moved on to something else, and also like. I wouldn't want to do it with the limitations that we had last time. Like last time there was, you know, very little real set pieces. It was all green screen, and half the movie had to be in comic form instead of actual film. And so just money, time, and I don't want to, see, but when we first started this, there was nothing. There was no Netflix She-Ra cartoon. There was no, you know, new Netflix He-Man cartoons on the horizon. The movie was on hold. So like, I think people wanted something. You know, I wanted something to see. You know, some kind of media entertainment regarding He-Man. So, but now that there are things. And possible things coming up and et cetera. Like, I think maybe the need for a follow up might not be quite as great, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I understand. Well, definitely, that makes sense to me, yeah.
I'd like you to do
one, like, so good, but.
Yeah, at some point, I hope you do come around and revisit it, though, because, like I said, with the live action movie, who knows where that's going to go. You'd like to believe that it's going to happen, but until I see like a behind the scenes set photo, that's when I'll start. The problem with me is being a fan of both Superman and He-Man. It's like, in terms of the films, it's like, all right, we're getting one. No, we're not. We're getting one. It's like, sure, let's talk about my movie. I'm like, I need to find a different character that I know is getting a movie so I don't have to go through this heartbreak every time. I do hope you get around to it at some point, for sure.
It would be cool. I like I said, I have a story that I feel is like way better than Fall of Grayskull. If somebody wants to like come help me produce it, I'll look into I'll look into it deeper.
Awesome. Yeah.
If I win lottery, I'll fund it for you. There you go. One of the things I noticed about the opening narration back to that, and even the cover art, reminds me of the 87 film. So are you a fan of the film? Because I know the film was quite different to the cartoon and stuff, you know, the Dolph Lundgren film.
Yeah, I am. I like it. I didn't hate it as a kid. It was disappointing. But definitely, you know, now as an adult, like, if anything, I love it for being an awesome 80s movie. Mm. But yeah. I do love it. I love Gwildor and Frank Langella's Skeletor. Everybody loves that.
He's brilliant. Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely love that movie. It would be there were a few nods in our film to that, like the Grayskull throne was kind of a mix between the filmation throne and the movie throne. Mm. And things like that. I even considered having Brian Cage's sword mimic or look like the one from the 87 movie.
That would have been cool,
But we just went with kind of just almost, you know, generic sword, generic barbarian sword.
Right. Yeah. Until I watched The Toys That Made Us and I can't remember what the other He-Man documentary is called that's on Netflix, but I didn't realise it was kind of so the creators of He-Man absolutely hated that film, didn't they? Like, because it didn't represent the cartoon, and they weren't fans of Dolph Lundgren, but as a kid, for me, I just wanted to see He-Man. I didn't really care about anything else, so
Yeah.
For me, Dolph Lundgren just looked like He-Man, so I didn't really take it that he was too skinny like the way they took it and stuff. But and that film's got an awesome soundtrack, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The score's fantastic. So,
yes. Yeah, well, for me, there were two films that I remember as a kid that I can remember having like a viewing experience of, and that was Masters of the Universe was one of them, and then the Tim Burton Batman was the other. So, you could say that it has flaws. They both have flaws or whatever, but I'll always have a soft spot and enjoy those two because of the memories that they come with. So for sure. But one of my questions is, we talked about, you know, He-Man, and you mentioned Brian Cage. When casting He-Man, that's got to be a tough proposition because, you know, given the fact that, you know, the character is so powerful, massive. And so when casting Brian Cage, how did that come about? You know, because Steven and I are wrestling fans, so, you know, we know him from wrestling, but how did that come about? Was his look one of the factors? Like, how did all that come to be?
One of the things that the movie hinged on, I was like, I've got to find a guy that was just massive and like looked the part, and that, you know, and also in the face too, not just his body, but, we ended up filming it here, where I live in Kentucky. Originally we had, planned on filming it in LA. Just because the original people that were going to help on the film, which a lot of people kind of dropped out, you know, that year, throughout the year, were located in California. And so I was trying to search for people local there to that might be interested, that kind of fit what I was looking for. And so I just a lot of internet searching and looking around online. I think at first I was going to I was Googling like gyms and like bodybuilding competitions and anything I could think of. And, I was like, maybe there's some like wrestling promotions out there. So I found one, I can't remember the name of it. I think it was like GPW or something like that. I could be saying that wrong, but, and I looked at the roster and like one guy, Brian, looked the part. I was like, man, this guy's massive. He's, you know, he's good looking. I was like, I wonder, if he, you know, would even consider, doing something like this. And so I reached out to him and he responded, which is great. And like, it turns out he's like a super huge fan of all the stuff that we love too. Like his favorite is X-Men and Wolverine. Like he loves.
All right, cool. Yeah.
He's
super. He's got the whole facial thing going that looks like Wolverine. I can see that. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh yeah, he does. Yeah. Yeah.
and so, he was totally into it, totally on board. We sent him the script and at first, and he told me this later, like when we flew him here, a few days before filming, we filmed the biggest chunk of it like in 3 days of filming, which is crazy. I did not sleep for that week. but we flew him here and, we went through everything. The cast sat around for a day or two and went through the scenes and dialogue, and we blocked everything. Did the choreography, the fight choreography, et cetera. And he told me later on that before he came, he didn't really know what to expect, but he really didn't think that this was anything. He thought it was just like some guys with like capes on running around in the woods. You know what I mean? so he was really impressed. Like, oh, like these guys have a little bit of, you know, production value and, you know, granted, we are not, you know, huge budget, but we try our best with what we have, and he was impressed. So I'm very glad that I was able to meet him, and more importantly, like he's just become our good friend. Like I love him. He's such a nice guy, such a genuine, talented guy. He and his wife and his daughter and his son. are all really cool, and I love that he's getting, you know, more successful with AEW now.
Yeah,
and like he deserves it. I mean, this guy has worked hard. Like, he lives, eats, and breathes like his craft. So he's awesome.
It's funny, after I saw the film, I'm like, well, they better make him the world champion now. I mean, he's He-Man. How can you not make him the world champion? I mean, there's, you know, it's...
There was some... He was... Back when he was in Impact, there was... he told me... I don't... Like, the He-Man harness that Johnny Bilson made, the guy that played Triclops made that, and it's... Really? He, cool. I have it, or I had it, but I sent it to Johnny... To for he was using it for his own, like a booth at PowerCon, and so he's had it. But Brian reached out, I guess, a few years ago and was like, "Man, if you get me that, or let me get that harness," he's like, "I'll wear it to the ring." I was like, "That's awesome." That's cool. Probably wouldn't be able to do that now, but back then,
back then, you never know.
Yeah,
awesome. No, it's cool. I was just gonna mention before you mentioned about the green screen, didn't you? And I kind of liked that vibe that gave the film, to it reminded me of like Sin City.
Yeah,
I was really I like that kind of style sometimes, because it's like makes it look different to other, you know, like other types of films as well. So I kind of like all that. But I can imagine. See, I'm a filmmaker myself, but I've never done anything with like big green screen or all. But I can imagine how hard it must be just to. You've got to know what you're filming, and then you've got to be able to make, you know, do the effects and stuff, haven't you, later, and know what you're doing. So I find it quite impressive that anyone's able to really do that, you know, because I watched like the making of and stuff as well, and they had like, you'd have like a green boulder, wouldn't you, in front of somebody and stuff, and I'm thinking, you've got to know in your head, haven't you, what you visualise, and I can imagine it's quite tough to kind of go off that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's the hardest thing ever. Like, my advice to anyone out there is never do it. at least on a full, like a big scale like that. But yeah, it is hard. It was hard, like you said, just like trying to think about every little aspect of everything, like where things are going to be, you know, when you're just looking at a person standing in front of a, you know, a green screen. Yeah, it was tough, and I never ever want to do that again. I did a commercial recently with a guy in front of a green screen, and like I had like PTSD. I was like, I don't want to do this.
They're gonna have to change the color of the screen just to get you on set. Yeah. It's like green.
Let's do like purple screen. How about that?
So, I felt like the star of the film, or the main focus of the film, was Teela. And you cast Mercedes Varbello, I believe, is in your film you're making now. Oh, I don't know if you made it, Bloody Man. I believe she's in that as well, isn't she? Yeah. So how did you, what made her the right choice for the part, and how did you kind of build a relationship with her and stuff?
Mercedes is the greatest ever. She's one of my best friends. Everything that I make, anything, I try to include her, just because she's so dedicated and so nice and so fun. I met her when I was casting my previous film back in 2012, Bunny. So another horror film. And she was, let's go back to Castle Grayskull Man for a second. So that happened in 2012 also at the end. And I was starting to like play with my YouTube channel a little bit. I was like, you know, I'm really excited that I, you know, have this action figure now, and I went to PowerCon, and like I was so excited that I found like this community of He-Man fans that I never knew really existed, and like I found my friend group basically, and so it was it like changed my life, and I was really excited. So I was starting to like make little videos about Castle Grayskull Man on YouTube. So I did kind of like a fake toy commercial and retro style. And then I did like a As Seen on TV kind of funny YouTube video. And then one of the things that I wanted to do was like a funny spoof music video. So like I wrote this like crazy, like hardcore metal song about Castle Grayskull Man, you know, very comedic and light in tone. And I filmed a music video for it. And I wanted certain characters to be in it. So on the back of his card is, you know, his bio. And I didn't write the bio. I kind of gave some like input, like some notes or whatever on my submission, but like I didn't write the bio. And so some of the characters in the bio, I was like, okay, so we need like Stratos needs to be in this, Battleground Teela, which was the type of Teela that ended up in Fall of Grayskull, you know, with the bikini top looking, you know, armor and the loincloth and stuff. So that was, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Like the
figure. Yeah.
Okay. So I was like, well, let's, you know, and Mercedes being my best friend at the time, I was like, hey, you want to help me make this music video and you can be Battleground Teela. And she's like, okay, that sounds great. And she even like, there's like a little rap interlude in the middle of it. And she's like rapping. but I didn't have any of the costumes. So I reached out to several people that I knew that I'd met through PowerCon. And I was like, hey, I need a Battleground Teela costume for this music video. And they're like, oh yeah. So, you know, I paid several people to make me these pieces. And then I filmed it and I still have not edited the music video. I still just have the footage sitting on a hard drive, like here, like 8 years later. It's crazy. One of these days I'll get to it, but
I would want to see it. We're like,
right. Yeah. like every year for PowerCon, I was like, okay, I'll do it and screen it at PowerCon for like late night humor. But anyway, so like when we were planning the movie, I was like, well, like we were doing the budget. I was like, well, we already have a Battleground Teela costume, and we already have Mercedes, who's a great actor and you know looks the part. You know, she seems to fit it well. So why don't we just make Teela in the movie Battleground Teela, and you know it would be, I feel like it kind of fit the aesthetic of the movie anyway. So that's the long answer to your short question.
It's funny because, you know, as I was watching, I'm like, oh, this is cool. You know, He-Man's going to be bad. Going into, before I'd even watch, I'm like, I can't believe I'm getting to see another movie with He-Man in it. You know, who would have thought that this was possible? Because 1987 till when I first saw this, was, you know, a decade and a bit had passed or more. My math is not on point, but it's been a long time. Yeah, it's two decades, but I don't want to go, you know, it's depressing to go that far. But anyway, so I had watched it. I was all getting hyped to see, you know, He-Man in live action again. And as I'm watching, I'm like, man, Teela is really badass. And I kept thinking, you've done something here that I found her to be cool in the cartoon, but sometime in the cartoon, they would never get the balance right of being like, you know, 1 minute she's this badass warrior, the next minute she's this damsel in distress that is just standing there, and you never managed. Like, I think what you did was you found that, like, the fact that she was saving in this one, she's basically coming to He-Man's rescue, which is the reverse of literally every typical you know story that we're used to, especially in those day and age. So I thought it was very well done, and I like she just gave it that, like there was no messing around. Like she was, if you take her on, she's gonna kick your ass. And I thought she was. I told Steven, I said, you know, all the actors did great. But I think two that really stood out the most for me was Mercedes and the name is blanking, but the Skeletor actor.
Yes, Kevin Clark.
Right. Those were the two that really stood out
Oh, he had me in stitches on gag reel when he was doing the cartoon voice. That was so funny. And yeah, the gag reel. Don't stop laughing as well. Yeah, it was. Because that voice is kind of. I wouldn't say it's easy to do, but it's one of them where you can kind of mimic it, but you don't sound like it. But he sounded like just like the cartoon. I'm like, this is brilliant. I'd be in absolute hysterics.
Yeah, because we all know that.
Yeah, that Skeletor laughs brilliant though in it as well. Like. Just in general, so.
And as I was watching and seeing how much action that Tila was getting into, I thought to myself, because nowadays, you know, like, I don't know if you've seen, Daniel, you probably have, but there was a rumor where that said that Tila was going to be the focus of the new Kevin Smith-led, you know, animated series. And some fans got up in arms, and I'm thinking, how can you, like, if you've watched this, the Power of Grayskull, and then read that news, why is this upsetting anybody? Like, I've never understood it. Like, so what? Tila has more of a you know, a role. That's the, why is that a negative? I never understood that mentality. Like, you know what I mean? By some members of fandom. So when I saw this, I was like, man, we definitely need more of Tila in this kind of
role, yeah.
Right, so
I know when you're a kid, like when I was a kid, I couldn't stand She-Ra. I was like, I remember once I used to sit through My Little Pony waiting for He-Man, and once She-Ra came on, I was absolutely fuming. This was when you were a little kid, but when you're a little kid, you're a bit like that. Aren't you? You do think girls are yucky and all that palaver, but I think when you're older, like now, I really appreciate like female heroes, and like I absolutely love Wonder Woman and Supergirl and things like that. And you know, when we watched the cartoon back for reviewing on this podcast, I've mentioned often like how much I really like Tila in the cartoon, because she's not like just there to be saved by He-Man. She's a badass in her own right and stuff. So I think you did that really well in your film as well, just to portray her that way.
But I think it was, correct me if I'm wrong, Daniel, but I think you, like where at the end where he's carrying her back. Where were they going? I can't remember where exactly you had said they were going. But when he's carrying her, they had that nice little interplay that kind of mimicked the cartoon in that.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like your little nod to that, and I really appreciate that. But, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite parts. There's several cartoon nods in there. Whenever she's talking to her mom about. I can't remember the dialogue. It's like, you know, a throne without the right person on it is nothing but a simple chair. And that comes from the Filmation cartoon. But I'm glad that you like Tila in the movie. I really love that character. I tried to, with all the characters, except Castle Grayskull Man, who's just unstoppable. I tried to make everyone, you know, very strong, but yet have, you know, moments of, you know, vulnerability and stuff. So to try to make the characters all a little, you know, dynamic. But I'm glad you like Tila. You talked about you don't understand why people would complain about a possible Kevin Smith show focusing too much on one character. And I think no matter what, I think you're going to get people to complain about anything.
Oh, sure. True. Yeah.
True.
It's the internet, after all.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, I'm glad you guys enjoyed that.
Before we get into a couple more thoughts on He-Man, I want to ask, were there other TV shows or animation that you were into back then? That you, like if everything lined up into place, and, you know, you had the budget that you wanted and everything else, that you'd adapt, like, you know what I mean? Like something like Thundercats or G.I. Joe or something. Like were there other shows that you were passionate about that you might consider tackling if everything fell into place?
Oh, man. So as a kid, you know, I, of course, like, I'm sure like you guys and everybody else, like, I loved a lot of cartoons. I think He-Man was first, then Transformers. Mm-hmm. Then Thundercats, then you know there's a hierarchy of my favorites, Ghostbusters, etc. But I would love to I wish that I just had an unlimited amount of budget to do whatever it is I wanted to do. It would be cool to do like a like a film that incorporated like every cool 80s cartoon, like
universe, yeah,
kind of like that one. Was it like a drug PSA, I think, with like the Ninja Turtles and Alf and Alvin and the Chipmunks? And I think it'd be cool to see something like that as like a live action movie.
That'd be awesome.
Didn't they once do a cartoon that was like He-Man, My Little Pony, and all that as like a special?
Did they?
I think they did, but not.
I'll Google it and find out. I may have dreamt it, right? Which is very possible with me. But I seem to remember they did one, and it was like, I think it was pretty awful from what I remember.
But you should send that to.
Have you heard of the Nostalgia Critic? I'm sure he reviewed it.
Yeah, Nostalgia Critic. Yeah, I've seen his stuff on YouTube.
What I'll do is I'll try and find it, and if I find it, I'll send it on to you, and then you can. I'm sure they did one that was like all the cartoons mixed or something, like a special.
I vaguely remember something, but I don't know if it's what exactly it was. It may have been what Daniel's saying with the commercial. But yeah, me personally, I'd love to see something done with. I mean, why Hollywood hasn't even attempted it? Well, I mean, maybe because they've had so much trouble with He-Man. But I think Thundercats would be another one that I think is begging.
I used to love Thundercats. Yeah.
Some form.
I agree, and I've seen a couple like fan trailers of Thundercats, It seems cool. I think it would be hard to get the looks right. Like my mind can't imagine what it would look like. So we would need
especially after Cats. I think people are like, I don't know if I want to touch this Thundercats thing.
Yeah, I am. And Thundercats. Speaking of them, I don't know. You guys may not have seen it, or even if you have, not like it. But Thundercats Roar. Mm. Have you seen that cartoon?
I've seen bits of it. The animation isn't my cup of tea, but I get the avenue they're going for. So
that's not my cup of tea. Either. But when I watched it, it's maybe one of like my most favorite television shows in the past like 20 years. I love it so much. Like there's so many callbacks to so many characters and so many like storylines from the original cartoon, and they use the same music in a lot of places. And I'm like, man, like this, my hats are off to the creators of Thundercats Roar. I know I've never really met anybody else that's really liked it like me, but.
Oh, no, I can appreciate what they're doing story-wise. It's more the animation than anything else.
Because I really like that Teen Titans Go, because I didn't want to watch it, but because my kids watch it, I think it's absolutely hilarious. And I think sometimes you pick up on bits of humor that maybe it's for the adults actually, that your kids don't quite get. And I think that's where you start to learn to appreciate cartoons like that sometimes.
Yeah. So back to He-Man quickly. There are a couple of animated revivals on Netflix, like we said. So what are your thoughts on both the Kevin Smith Revelations, I think it's called, and the CG animated origin kind of tale that they're doing? And also, what would you do if Sony came to you and said, here's, $100 million, make the live action movie for us? Those are three questions in one that I'm asking.
Okay, so what do I think of the two upcoming
projects?
Part of me is excited, part of me is worried, part of me is trying not to think about it or care as to avoid disappointment. Mm-hmm. Not because I don't have faith in the people creating it. We've all had things that we were excited for, and then they came and we're like, oh, like that had so much potential to make my life the best it's ever been. But and I think that's where people like, you ruined my childhood, So I think that I don't know anything really about the CG except for those images that were released. That's all I know.
I think that's all the reveal.
That's all we have right now. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious as to what it's going to be and what the tone is. The Kevin Smith one, I think it's going to be really cool. He at PowerCon when he announced it, I remember him saying that it was, you know, picking up where the Filmation series left off, but then he also said that it was going to be like dark and serious. I think I read that. Correct me if I'm wrong. So I'm kind of like wondering like how he's going to marry those two together. Like, right, oh, well, yeah. You know, the Filmation wasn't dark and gritty.
It was anything but, yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's really cool that the cast is awesome. Yeah. I think it's cool that Scareglow and Stinkor are going to be there. I hope that
yeah.
I hope that Stinkor is not, you know, like a pothead.
Well, Alvin Oppenheimer's in it again, isn't he?
He is Mossman, I think.
Mossman, yeah, that's it. I was trying to think who it was. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think. Oh, and Mark Hamill, of course, like amazing.
And, yeah, and Kevin like, Conroy. So
yeah. So like, so this, yeah. So he's got all-star cast. He's got, you know, Netflix funding. Like he has the potential. This has the potential to be like the greatest thing ever. I hope so. I think so. I think that I hope so, and I hope that I think so.
Sounds good.
And you asked if what would I do with $100 million a budget for a film. Man, I would
like if they said to you, make us a live action movie, and it had to be an origin and it had to be this and that. Well, how would you approach that? Like, what would you do?
I would take all of the critiques, ideas, and criticisms that I've read online for the past, you know, 10, 15 years on everything on. What people hate, what people like, people don't like is, you know, I would love to make it look and feel as if it, well, I want to, okay, so I don't want to say that I want to correct the 87 movie because it doesn't need correction. It's a great movie on its own.
Sure, yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I would come at it and make it look and feel as if people made that movie in like 1986. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't try to make it like, you know, like Justice League, or, you know, I wouldn't try to like over the top it. And I would try to do as much practical as possible.
Sure.
With CG just to accent it. And I would try to keep it as close to the source stuff as possible, especially in the costumes. Like He-Man would look like, I think He-Man would look more like the vintage He-Man than the Fall of Grayskull He-Man did. You know, like he's got to have the harness with the cross on the chest, and his sword, you know, would need to look like the He-Man sword. And so, yeah, is that kind of,
Totally. Yeah, definitely want to get. The only thing that I would, if I knew you were getting all that money, I'd be like, you gotta put Battle Cat in there. that's the one thing I would ask.
I would put Battle Cat in there. I would have him probably talk once or twice.
Yeah.
A lot of people fight about that. Like, oh, I love 2000X because he didn't talk, but we love how he talked in the Filmation. I think you could make it realistic and still have him say like maybe a couple lines, maybe like toward the end or something. Like he didn't talk the whole time. And maybe Cringer doesn't talk, but like Battle Cat talks, but he just doesn't talk till like the end. And like he surprises everybody, like everyone's standing yeah. around like, oh, we saved the day. Happy ending. And Battle Cat's like, yeah, that was fun. And everybody looks at him like, what? You can talk? He's like, yeah.
That'd be actually pretty awesome. It's funny.
I have to. We're
reviewing the animated series. We're like going back and doing retro reviews.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had forgotten that because it had been so long since I revisited it. I had forgotten that he talked. So when he talked in one episode, I'm like, "What the hell?"
Cringes. He's like, I don't want to be Battle Cat, He-Man and stuff. Battle Cat.
No, Cringer, I remember, but Battle Cat.
He didn't want to be a badass. But the one character I think I won't be that bothered if they didn't use was Orko, because I don't think as a kid I liked Orko that much. I think it might be better if he didn't talk. If he just kind of came in or made him look like some sort of bad, I don't know how they'd do it anyway. I don't really, because he's like this, I don't know, I just don't know how you'd do it, but
yeah, it's one of those things where like I can't really wrap my mind around what that would be like in live action.
Yeah,
did you guys download the Fall of Grayskull comic book?
I need to get
my hands on.
Yeah. Oh, so you don't even know the first half of the story then?
No, it just picks up right where the movie.
Yeah, I thought that was it. I thought it just was like almost like a final story in a sense. Like
if you go to fallofgrayskull.com and then there's a link comic, you can download a PDF. Anyway, that's kind of like the first half of the story. And so in that story, like you see a panel where like Battle Cat's injured and they're loading him into the attack track. So just to, of course, you know, there was no way that I could Battle Cat in the movie, so I had to get him out of there somehow. So he exists in the He-Man in Fall of Grayskull universe, but like he's just back at the hospital.
Yeah, I figured it was more budget thing, and I'm like, yeah, I totally understand why he's not here, but
yeah.
It's like if Sony's doing it and they got $100 million to pay me, he better be in there or I'm gonna get upset.
Well, we said at the end of our review that we think it'd be good if like Netflix got you to do a series.
Yeah,
like a live action series.
We're totally campaigning for them to give you money and to make this thing. So just so you know that we're actively looking forward to doing that. So I don't know if it'll work, but what the hell?
I appreciate those kind words. Yeah, get one of those petition sites going, right?
If the Snyder Cut can come out, why can't we get you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Why can't we get Netflix to give you money and do a He-Man show?
I'm just downloading the comic now, so I'll read that tonight. We'll have to review that now, Adam.
Yeah, oh, definitely. We'll have to add that to the list. But go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the comics, we had them printed like in physical form, and at all of our screenings that we did, like we passed those out as people came in the door. I wanted to do it because when I went to go see Secret of the Sword as a kid, they passed out those little comics. So that was kind of my nod to that.
Cool.
That's awesome. Definitely gotta check that out. But I guess Steven, before we wrap up with Daniel, we should ask him what he's got.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I watched the trailer for The Bloody Man. I'm a huge horror fan and stuff, so I was quite digging what I was seeing and stuff. But was that kind of Halloween inspired a little bit? You know, I thought some of the shots looked a bit Carpenterish to me.
Yeah, it's we're all kind of like a result, our lives and creative people are a result of all the things that we've taken in over the years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm sure that that there's some Halloween influences in there. There's definitely a couple shots. There's a beginning shot where there's some kids walking to school.
That was in the trailer, wasn't it?
That's
straight away. I was thinking of that scene in Halloween where they're walking down there in Haddonfield and stuff. So.
Yes. So if you are a He-Man fan or a horror fan or an 80s fan, like this movie has all three of those things combined. The Bloody Man is it's done. I'm working on a local screening. I'm working on like getting it out there to the masses currently. So when I was a kid, I was into all the stuff we've been talking about. Plus, I was into like scary stuff. Like I would in elementary school, I would go and like check out like these ghost story books out of the library there, and I had like monster trading cards and whatnot. And And I wrote these little stories called The Bloody Man. It was just something I made up. I don't know where that came from as a kid. And they were, you know, reading them now, they're kind of funny. And some of the time you're like, wow, like what was wrong with me as a kid? Like, why did I write that? You know, like, but anyway, so right as, I think we hadn't even filmed Fall of Grayskull yet, but my now wife and I found like a box of stuff at my parents' house, and in that box were these little stories, and we're like, hey, we should, I mean, these are hilarious. We should rewrite these and like make this into our next movie, and that's what we did. And so like and in the story, it's about like a family it takes place in the 80s. It's filmed and looks like it could have come out in the 80s. Kind of like as maybe like a B movie, and more of a family movie too. It's not straight. It's not slasher movie at all. It's more of like, you ever seen the movie The Gate?
Yeah, I've seen that. Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Is that, he's got Stephen Dorff in that, right?
The Gate. I don't know. I don't know. I don't have.
Yeah, I have seen it though. Yeah, yeah.
I don't have ultimate IMDb knowledge. But,
I do have money. Yeah,
that's awesome. But anyway, so it's about a kid in the 80s who loves all the stuff that we loved. Instead of it being Masters of the Universe, although like there, and if there's a shot in the room, you're going to see a Secret of the Sword poster on the wall, or you're going to see all the nice. The toys or the playsets on the ground. You're going to see all this stuff. There's a Fall of Grayskull poster in his room too.
Sweet.
but instead of that, I didn't want to, I wanted to be able to like, market this movie and sell it. So I didn't want to like, focus on like this kid liking, here is a He-Man and the Masters of the Universe figure. Because I don't own the rights to that.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
So he likes Realm of the Underworld. Are you guys familiar with that?
That I've not heard of.
Okay. So Realm of the Underworld is, one of my friends, Michael, he has a company, Zolo World, and he owns the rights to the old Rimco figures and the molds to those. So so like the knockoff He-Man stuff from the 80s, he has the rights to make those now, and he has several lines, and one of his main line is Realm of the Underworld, and he puts these out. He's always at PowerCon. You should look that up. Really cool figures. Anyway, so he has, I got with him and I was like, hey, I want to put this in the movie. I want this guy to like love Realm of the Underworld instead of Masters of the Universe. And it's basically, it's the same thing basically.
Yeah.
So for the Kickstarter, one of the rewards was a barbarian man. So I made this character a barbarian man. So I was like, hey, can you take, these characters and these parts and like paint them and make it look like, as close to He-Man as possible without it, being He-Man. So,
yeah.
So that was one of the rewards on Kickstarter, but also like that is what the kid loves in the story. So like he's, for like a birthday present, he's getting like a Barbarian Man action figure, and it's like his favorite thing. And he's always talking about it. And he's always reading the mini comics that come with the Barbarian Man. And that's kind of how we learn about the story of the Bloody Man's origin, is through these mini comics. And anyway, he has to like learn how to like use the stuff that he loves, cartoons and toys and stuff, and defeat this evil being that's terrorizing his family. So there's a lot of 80s nostalgia, but not like you've seen. I don't think. I think it's unique in that it hits close to home with people like us who loved Masters of the Universe and stuff like that as a kid.
Awesome. Sounds interesting. Definitely be on the lookout for that and checking it out for sure.
Cool.
I guess that pretty much wraps it up, right, Stephen? We've gotten all our questions in. Daniel, this has been a pleasure for us. Thanks for agreeing to come on and just share some of your experience with making the movie, and also just your general love of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. We really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. This has been great.
If if our listeners want to get in touch with you, where can they do that? Where can they keep up with you?
Let's see. I mean, I've got so many. let's see. I guess, like as far as like movie stuff is concerned, you know, Red Serial Films, on Facebook, Serial, like S-E-R-I-A-L, like serial killer.
Yeah.
Not breakfast cereal. Yeah, right.
Could do a multi business thing there and have a branded cereal. Horror based
cereal. That'd be something.
There you go. So there's that on Facebook. This the same on Instagram. Yeah. So I mean, if you stalk me enough on Google, I'm sure you can find me.
Yeah, we don't endorse stalking here, folks. But yeah.
As far as the Bloody Man, thebloodyman.com. And YouTube. I guess YouTube. I have got so many. I'm sitting here like pimping myself out. Anyway.
That's awesome. So hopefully our listeners will. We'll keep track of what you got going on, and we'll definitely be on the lookout for that film, and hopefully whatever else you do beyond that film, we'll definitely be on the lookout for. If you guys want to get in touch with either of us, Stephen, where can they find you if they want to?
At SteveBob1984 on Twitter and at MMNPDC for the page for the podcast.
And if you want to get in touch with me and chat about He-Man or any other 80s property that you love that I probably love too, it's at Adam_LeesFan on Twitter. And then if Facebook is more your speed, we have a Multiverse Musings Podcast Network Facebook page. If you go there, either myself or one of my co-hosts on one of my other shows will add you to the group, and we can chat about He-Man or professional wrestling or superheroes or whatever you want, except for politics. We don't get involved in that. anything is on the table, so come find us there. We hope you had a fantastic time listening to this great interview with Daniel, that he gave us all of his insight for making the Fall of Grayskull film. And until next time, we want to wish you so long and good journey.
Good journey.
Skeletor. It's over.
Yes. For you.
By the power of Grayskull.